Call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. It's 1 minute after 9 o'clock. Joining me today are my co-chairman, Senator Stedman. Coming in the room, Senator Olson, Senator Huggins, and Senator Elton. The other two members are in transit on the plane this morning. Hopefully they'll be joining us shortly. But today we have a presentation on the State of Alaska's 2010 operating budget. It's going to be presented by David Teal. Last week we had the administration present the budget, so Mr. Teal is going to go over his view of the agency's requests. Welcome, Senate Finance. Mr. Teal, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am David Teal. I'm Director of Legislative Finance, and as you know, Legislative Finance is a nonpartisan agency, and our role in the budget process is not to present the budget, but to analyze it. And we provide assistance to the legislature as it reshapes the governor's request. So we get that request on December 15th and spend the next month or so doing a bunch of technical stuff so that making sure that details are correct and that we can reproduce the budget with the help of legal services. You're all familiar with our work and know that we produce not only the appropriation bills, but a series of reports, and that those reports start with statewide summary and then drill down, providing further and further, more and more detail, or to use an airplane analogy from Representative Kelly, the budget process is sort of like a series of flyovers at a lower and lower altitude. And so I'm going to start at the 40,000 foot level here and try to avoid going a whole lot lower than that. But it's not strictly a presentation. What I'm really doing is talking about four charts that appear in the overview of the governor's request that came out at the beginning of session. So please ask questions as I go. If you have them, there's no, you know, PowerPoint here. It's just four charts. So what can we see from 40,000 feet? And I think the answer here is on this sensitivity chart for 2010. We refer to it as a sensitivity chart because it refers to the budget, which is $5 billion approximately, and you'll see the line that at $5 billion, and then the sensitivity refers to oil prices. So on the x-axis you have various oil prices, and the revenue that it produces is this line. You can see that we break even at about $74. So the way to read the chart is if oil is above $74 per barrel, we're in this area and have a surplus. Of course, we're not worried about oil being over $74. The problem right now is that we're in the red, or potentially in the red, for the first time since fiscal year 05. And I'm not going to extend this flight pattern beyond 2010, but I will note that you can sort of see into the future from 40,000 feet, because all you need to know is that we've got about $8 billion in reserves, and if there's a deficit, you can do the pretty simple math, which is if we've got $8 billion in reserves and we spend $4 billion a year, the reserves will last 2 years. If we burn at $2 billion a year, the reserves will last 4 years. We don't know precisely what the price is going to be in 2010. You'll get governor's amendments tomorrow, and with those amendments, you'll get an updated forecast. So this will help you now tell you, well, if oil comes in the new forecast at $60, you can expect a deficit of about $1.5 billion. But I don't know what the forecast is going to be when it's released. So you can also look back from from 40,000 feet and look at 2009. Same sensitivity chart, except you'll notice now that the budget's at $7 billion instead of $5 billion. That's due to two things, really. One is the $1.2 billion in savings that occurred in 2009, and the other is a $750 million resource rebate, which, if you got rid of those two things, bring you down to about the $5 billion level that we have in 2010.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
Just pause there for a minute and just for a reminder, the rebate, when was the rebate done and when was the normal budget cycle finished for FY09?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, the resource rebate was something that happened in special session last year in, I don't even remember what month it was, but
August.
And the 09 budget process is actually still in progress, because typically you pass the 09 budget during the year. You come back the following year and address supplemental requests. So every year has two live fiscal years, the current one, 09, and then the one that you're focusing on is 2010. And you've got the supplemental coming before the committee later this week or early next. So when you finish all your supplemental bills, you're finally finished with FY09. And there probably will be supplementals all the way through the capital bill.
Senator Stedman?
Well, I just, as a point, a lot of us view the budget cycle, Mr. Chairman, the vast majority of it ending when we adjourn out from normal regular session, and the supplemental budget we do this time of year is a stopgap measure to backfill oversights or changing economic scenarios or what have you facing the state from when we leave around the end of April until we get back here in January. So when we sit down and do our budgeting for the year, much like FY10, we spend a lot of time trying to make sure we have a balanced budget. And we have, like last year, a particular amount of savings put away relative to our spending. It's quite another matter to have a supplemental appropriation in August of 750 some odd million, plus other issues. And it makes it very difficult for this committee to do a budgetary work for that any given fiscal year when things of that nature comes up outside of normal session.
And on top of that, I think that the committee is well aware. 2 weeks ago, we were informed that as a result of lower predicted revenues for 2009, and the fact that we had the $750 million supplemental and we made appropriations to the CBR that already transpired in order to accomplish what we need in the supplemental for 2009, we are going to require a CBR vote. Please continue, Mr. Teal.
One of the points of this chart, of course, is to show that you don't have merely a potential deficit in 2009. It's real, at least given the forecast that came out on February 3rd with the supplemental bill. And I say real because you can see the break-even point here for a $7 billion budget is oil at approximately $83. And we don't have any expectation of having an average price of $83. In fact, the forecast says the average price will be somewhere here in the mid-60s, and that gives us a deficit of, on the chart, it shows close to $1.9 billion. Now, in the revenue forecast that came out, that forecast is closer to $1.3 to $1.4 billion. But that revenue forecast also came out with the supplemental, which if you were to do everything in the supplemental, reduces the budget by $200 million. So this chart is not particularly accurate. It gives you a good look at what oil prices do to revenues and therefore to your ability to balance the budget. But Mr. Chairman, I think you're correct in saying that at any price for the remainder of the year, even if it went up towards $70 for the remainder of the year, we still face a deficit. And the governor did include a CBR provision in the supplemental bill, which would mean that the gap would be filled by withdrawing money from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. And then we drop a little bit, maybe 30,000 feet, and look at the fiscal summary itself. And you don't know how pleased I am to say that neither you nor the committee, neither you nor I have to go through dueling fiscal summaries with OMB this year. And there are a few on the committee that weren't on last year, so a short digression here. Last year, OMB and Legislative Finance agreed on revenue and expenditure at the total or the bottom line. But we had differences in presentation, and they weren't simply issues of style. They were substantial differences in the sense that OMB said the growth was about 4% from the prior year, and Legislative Finance said it's more like 14%. But all the numbers were the same, so there was a dispute over what real growth was and so on. So we met during the interim with OMB and developed a format that I hope is clearer, simpler, and more informative. And I think this is extremely important to you as Finance Committee members, because you've got critical decisions to make. And the last thing you need is confusion regarding where you are now. They just simply distract you from the real issues at hand, which is you've got a deficit, and it's nice to agree how big the deficit is and what growth is. So the changes to the fiscal summary are that we divided it into four pieces: agency operations, statewide operating costs, capital, and savings. And it's probably easier to just look at this chart instead of the fiscal summary itself as we walk through some of those.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
Can we back up to the previous spreadsheet or maybe come back to it? I got a couple questions on it.
Go ahead. Please proceed.
On line 23. Line 23, that's 28. Direct appropriations to retirement accounts. Could you touch on that? We have that little bit of explanation on what those two numbers are, both 09 and projected for 010.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, direct appropriations to retirement refers to the excess that the state pays to the retirement fund. And when I say excess, I mean that you passed a law that says that PERS employers pay 22%. And the state will contribute any amount required above 22% of payroll. So, and teachers' retirement is essentially the same thing. We've set school district contributions at 12.5%, and then the state contributes money directly to the retirement account rather than giving it to the school districts and having them contribute it. So last year that was about $450 million because the rate was 34% or somewhere in that neighborhood. So a substantial amount above the 22% stated in law.
And then
this year, the actuarial recommendations said that you can drop your rate to 27%. But we know that the actuarial valuation lags 2 years, and that since that time there have been substantial losses in retirement funds, and we also know that rates will turn around and go back up in the near future. So the governor put in a request here of $450 million, which is about $160 million more than the actuaries say is required to meet their calculated rate, or required contribution, if you want to think of it that way. So one could argue that you can reduce that 2010 contribution to retirement by $160 million and still comply with the actuaries' recommendations. But of course, if you read the headlines, you'll know that the retirement funds lost approximately $3 billion last year. But that won't show up in rates for another 2 years. So it's up to you as legislators to determine whether you're going to continue to contribute this higher level or drop it to the actuarial recommendation, or
Mr. Chairman,
fund it at whatever level you choose.
Senator Stedman?
So I think it's important to note that line 23 then is really comprised of two components. One of them is the addition above the 22 or 12.5%, depending on if it's PERS or TERS, to hold the communities and the schools harmless. And then another component of it, 160 or so, is an extra payment.
That's correct.
To help work on the liability. Okay. And then can we go on and have an explanation on line 25? I think that created some discussion this year.
Line 25 is oil and gas investment credits. And last year, that amount was $400 million. And you may recall that that started out as a $25 million estimate. And that the administration then came back and said, we need substantially more than that. There were several increases to it. Last year, in March, it eventually bumped up to about $200 million for 2009. And then in March, they came back and said, we need another $200 million. Bumped it up to $400 million. This year, in 2010, they requested $300 million. In the supplemental request, however, the governors reduced this $400 million by 50%. So she's now dropped that number to $200 million. So it's fairly obvious to me that they simply have a very difficult time determining how much will be paid out as credits. I have no idea whether that's because drilling activity or exploration activity is much lower than they expected, or there's some delay in claiming those credits. But one way or the other, it looks like there's $200 million instead of $400 million that will be flowing out in 2009. And it wouldn't surprise me, based on that action in 2009, that the amendments released tomorrow will reduce this $300 million as well. But that's just a guess.
But under normal circumstances, once a budget is approved, and if the expenditure isn't made, the funds automatically lapse anyway, so there's no real significance in reducing the budget from 400 to 200. If it's unspent, it still stays with the general fund. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that normally is correct with, for instance, operating budget appropriations to agencies. Any unspent money simply falls back to the general fund. In this case, however, it's not a general fund appropriation. The money was deposited into an oil and gas credit fund, which doesn't lapse. So that if this money isn't refunded to oil companies this year, the money simply sits in that fund and is available to pay future credits. So that, you know, arguably you could, for instance, take the governor's supplemental request of $200 million and say, it's already in there, we don't want to reverse that decision, the $200 million can simply stay in the fund, and we can reduce the 2010 contribution to the fund by $200 million. It's just a question of which year's money you choose to use.
Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If I could, just trying to tie all this together. There's a lot other, there's other oil and gas credits. So what oil and gas credit is this, and is this not the smaller credits? And if so, how do you deal with the investment, the 20% capital credit on your revenue line?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, you're right. There are two different kinds of credits. The major producers who do exploration or development work simply deduct those credits from their income tax. It, I guess if you would think in terms of personal income tax, if you pay income tax and you simply net it out, no one even knows necessarily what that credit was. I mean, the federal government does, but and Department of Revenue may, but they don't release that information. So we have no idea the amount of credits claimed by the major producers. It's netted out. It doesn't even appear as revenue to the state. These credits, on the other hand, are the transferable credits. They're the credits that are earned by exploration companies and others who are not yet producing. So they don't have the tax liability and can't net it out against their tax liability, and therefore get a credit that they can sell to someone who does have a tax liability, and then Conoco or someone else can turn those credits in, and we need an appropriation to pay for those, as you call them, smaller credits.
Senator Stedman?
Just as a note, Mr. Chairman, I just would like to remind the committee that we've struggled with this ever since we've done the PPT and then the ACES, trying to look at the gross revenue of the state, then the 20% credits, and then the adjusted gross. So when we look at the revenue number, we see what the value of the resource is at the wellhead, and we can see then what the amount of capital credit is flowing against this revenue. So then we can go to the next step and ask ourselves, what are they doing, the industry, to create that capital credit, and is it deduction, and is it doing what we want it to do, exploration and development, or is it something else? And it's just challenging if you don't see the gross number to help trigger yourself that there's something else going on above the gross revenue line. I know we've asked the Department of Revenue several times to try to deal with that in the revenue forecast and lay that stuff out so it's clear to the public.
Before we leave today, I would like you to go over the capital appropriations, but please continue with your presentation, Mr. Teal.
Okay. If I could, I'd just switch to the chart, because what I was going to do was describe the four pieces that we broke the budget into. And of course, the solid line is revenue. And you can see that FY06 through FY09 were extraordinary years in terms of revenue. The prices have been way higher than normal, and of course revenue follows the price. The bars are the four pieces of the budget. And you can see that savings occurs when we have money. Back here in the early 80s, when there was a big revenue spike, we saved money. In fact, we put money directly into the permanent fund. And then again, when oil spiked in 2005 and on, we had significant savings here. And now in 2010, for the first time, savings have gone negative, meaning that the governor's budget proposes withdrawing money from savings. Capital shows much the same pattern.
But before you go from there, the spikes in 09 and 010, a large portion of those were as a result of a change in our tax structure as it relates to progressivity.
Through the chair, yeah, the in revenue, the spike in revenue, or the
right.
Yeah, absolutely. The progressive tax made a huge difference in revenue, and of course, as you know, production has declined, and progressivity kicks in very strong above about $60 oil, so I don't know exactly how much of the revenue is attributed to high prices, which we would have benefited from under the gross production tax as well, or how much is due to the progressivity. But I think revenue could probably break that down. So the pattern for capital is fairly similar. You see that when we have money, the dark line here gets larger. And in these years where revenue was flat, the capital budget sometimes nearly vanishes. And by that, it's simply the minimum amount required to get your federal match, a little bit more. And then again, as revenue spiked, the capital budget has grown. The statewide expenditures are those things that aren't directly related to agency operations. That's the retirement contributions that we talked about, the oil and gas credits we talked about. It's also debt service and other fund capitalizations. You'll see that during the early oil spike, we capitalized a number of loan funds and then had issued general obligation bonds. And then as the general obligation bond debt service faded away, statewide portion of the operating budget virtually vanished in these years. And now, with retirement credits and oil and gas credits, they've come back and are quite large. And in 2009, the resource rebate is also included in the statewide costs. And finally, that
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. David, the way you have it graphed in blue, the operations budget, it looks like there's been a tremendous growth in the operating budget. Is that accurate? The blue went from 07.
You're talking.
Blue.
Excuse
Say
me.
Again?
Through the chair. Are you talking about the bottom line here, the agency
the
operations,
state,
or the
state, state operations, which is in light blue?
Light blue. Yes. Tremendous growth, very soon, very sudden, because what happened was retirement went from a fully funded program to a $5 billion unfunded liability in 1 year. That required substantial changes to retirement systems, and we're now paying $450 million into retirement costs, where it used to be zero. Oil and gas credits were zero and are now $400 million a year. The resource rebate was a one-time $750 million thing. So absolutely, this is something that I look at as retirement, for instance. That's something that occurred regardless of oil. It had nothing to do with oil prices. It had to do with stock markets and actuarial tables and healthcare costs. If oil hadn't spiked when it did, we would still be facing this $400 million cost of retirement systems with no money to pay it. So we were facing a pretty serious challenge in 2005 and 2006 that was buried by the avalanche of oil money. I mean, you just appropriated the money and no one seemed to notice that much, that you just spent an extra $400 million and now with oil credits another $400 on top of that.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Senator Elton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David, where in this graph do we see the pre-funding for education? Is it in the blue or the purple?
Through the chair, Senator Elton, that's actually in the yellow. because we consider it savings.
So putting the money aside for spending next year, it would be, it's in the yellow.
Correct. That yellow includes savings of about, through the years, about $1 billion into the public education fund, $300 million into the AHFC account, $1 billion into the statutory budget reserve, and $5.8 billion into the constitutional budget reserve. So that's the major pieces of this, of these yellow lines from here to here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Stedman.
Can we go back, if we could, Mr. Chairman, to Senator Huggins' question and just add a little bit onto that, if I could. We take the dark blue, which is the agency operations, and there's been a lot of discussion here on the growth of that, especially the last year of the previous administration and the first couple of years of the current one. And we take the light blue on top of that, and we take out the special dividend last year, the $1,200 dividend. Pretty much all of that, what's left, would be costs that we have to meet on an ongoing basis. And if not, how much of that dark blue and light blue line wouldn't have to be met?
Mr. Teal.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I think you could probably reduce some of the operating budget, but you can see here that the dark blue lines, which is the agency operating budget, so it's what people, I guess, what I think the general population thinks of when you say the state budget. I believe they think of that as agency operating budgets. And you can see that agency operating budgets grew rapidly when there was revenue and then flattened out, as opposed to the savings, which declined, and the capital budget, which declined when revenue went away. Operating budgets simply go flat. And when the restraints are on growth are lifted by revenue that came in and after 05, you can again see rapid growth in the agency operating budget. If revenue is flat, what I expect to see is that the operating budget flattens out here, rather than the capital budget may decline, the savings will probably certainly decline. But once the operating budget grows, it tends to simply stabilize it at its peak and then grow next time there's money. So I don't know how much you can actually cut the operating budget. The growth here has been between 10% and 14%, and in 2010 it dropped to about 2.7%. So in 2010 there's minimal growth, and in fact, maybe we should just go back to the fiscal summary. It's easier to talk about that from here. For agency operations, you'll see on line 12. Well, let's look at line 11 and just go with the whole current year appropriations. You'll see that the agency operating budget increased by $92 million in 2010. But it's important to note that of that $92 million increase, 85 of it was predetermined. By that I mean that you passed legislation last year, or like formula funding for education, that increased education costs by $51 million. You also approved salary increases statewide of about $31 million. You had a bill that reduced business license taxes, and so the substitution of general funds for business license taxes was another three. The sum of those is $85 million. So don't conclude right away that there's only $7 million worth of growth in the operating budget, but that's what that superficial look would lead you to believe. But even from 30,000 feet here, there are two objects that you can see pretty clearly, and those are the fuel trigger, which is last year a $44 million appropriation to agencies to pay for high fuel costs. This year, that trigger was dropped to $24 million. So there's $24 million of savings that's difficult to see in this number. And then power cost equalization. Again, during the August special session, there was a $23 million appropriation to power cost equalization. So you've got those two large FY09 expenditures that you can back out of the 2010 budget. But even with that, the increase is 2.7%. And as I said, the increases during the past 4 years have been between 10 and 14% in agency operations. If you go here to statewide operations, you'll see a reduction of $840 million. But there's not much to focus on there. 750 of it is the resource rebate, and another 100 million is the oil credits. So that's simply a wash. That's just FY09 items that don't appear in 10, but they're very easy to explain. The capital budget last year was $670 million, and it dropped to $535. So there's a reduction of $133 million in the capital budget. But that's not unusual at this point, because the governor's budget typically is a starting point, and the legislature adds on its own capital projects.
But in comparison, do you have what the governor requested last year as compared to what she's requesting in capital appropriations for 2010? It seems to me that the request has increased from her original request in 2009 to her request in 2010 before the legislature starts working on the capital budget.
Mr. Chairman, that's absolutely correct. Her capital budget last year was essentially a minimum required to get federal match budget. She really had a small budget in her original request. And of course it grew substantially during the legislative process, both by legislative add-ons and with governor's amendments. But at $535 million, the capital budget is probably large considering the fiscal situation. And again, back to the chart, you can see that the 2010 capital budget is not large compared to the recent past, but it's a good sized budget compared to, you know, anything here back to the early 80s.
And this does not take into consideration the fact that shortly we're going to be receiving the stimulus package, which the vast portion is going to be capital, and the total stimulus package is right around $1 billion.
Correct, and Mr. Chairman, that would be mostly federal funds. And at this point, I have no idea whether that stimulus package is going to be federal funds on top of general fund expenditures, or whether it's going to result in reductions in the general fund budget. And that probably applies more to the operating budget than to capital, because we know there are, for instance, major contributions to K-12 education that are coming through the stimulus package. And our state formula says that state aid is basic need minus federal funds. So unless you do something about it, it seems to me that the stimulus package for K-12 simply replaces general fund dollars one for one.
But the funds that we show here in the governor's proposed FY10 budget of $1.1 million in federal funds does not include any funds for the stimulus package. Is that correct, or do we know that yet?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. We don't know exactly where the money goes. This is the governor's budget as it was requested on December 15th. There's substantial changes expected from the stimulus package, both operating and capital.
Senator Elkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. David, is somebody in your shop working on what the rules are for the stimulus dollars about, you know, how much switching the state is going to be allowed to do, substituting the stimulus dollars for general fund dollars?
Mr. Chairman, I actually read that stimulus bill over the weekend, and you know, it is not a fun bill to read. It gave me no indication of what's going on, what will go on. I think that some of it may supplant, but I think it's really designed to supplement expenditures. Otherwise, if you simply supplant general funds, you help out many, many states that are in a far worse financial situation than we are. But you can't call it stimulus. So we are working on it, but I think that both the executive branch and the legislative branch need a lot more work on that bill. You're going to have a huge number of projects turned in. You're going to need some way to evaluate them and get them in a bill and move that bill pretty quickly, because there are some pretty severe time constraints on spending that money. And unless the legislature has some way of very quickly analyzing the administration's proposals, and I know they're working very hard to develop those proposals and put them down, but you're going to need something like the capital system, where there's input and there's backup that you can get to, that everyone can share, so that you can determine which of those projects go into a bill. We have created a new fund code for the stimulus package, and the purpose of that fund code is to not merely to track all the money that comes from the stimulus package, but also to ensure that the legislature has some control over that. As you heard from DOT last week, they have substantial federal authorization right now that would allow them to simply sign off on things as soon as they receive federal cash. And that's because they've got federal authorization to spend the money if the money comes in. What we've done is, by creating a new fund code, is say that you don't have that kind of federal money to spend. When the cash comes in, there's a new fund code for it, and unless the legislature appropriates money from that new fund code, DOT cannot simply proceed with any project. So we're working on it, but we're a long ways from seeing any projects turned in, from having you have the information in front of you to evaluate. And of course, once you evaluate and make your decisions, I think we can get a bill drafted. But there's a lot of work to do before there's a bill drafted.
Thank you, Senator Elkin. Senator Stedman?
Just a point of clarification, maybe to help with that response. The fund code, can you briefly explain to the committee how that fund code creation takes place and who's in control of it?
Well, the fund code is simply something that legislative finance adds. You can use it as you can use any other fund code by simply specifying to us when we draft the bill that's the pot of money that you want to spend. So that the federal fund code, normal federal receipts, not that it matters, but it's code 1002. And normally federal projects would be coded with that fund code. And if we now say there's a new fund code, it is revenue specifically related to the stimulus package, or the stimulus bill that just passed, then it's completely separate from normal federal receipts, giving you complete authority over which projects get money, because again, the executive branch cannot spend money that you don't appropriate. So even if federal receipts come in, they can't use them, even if they've got excess authorization of normal federal code. You will have to take action appropriating this new fund code before they can spend any of the stimulus money.
Mr. Chairman, if I...
Senator Stedman.
If I understand the issue correctly, then, we in the legislative branch, the finance committees, decide what fund codes are created. You're the execution arm, and that puts the legislature in a position of having some review and authorization authority over that particular fund code. In this case, we're talking about the stimulus money. Is that correct?
Through the chair, the legislature has the power of appropriation. That is your function, is to determine how much money and what kind of money is spent.
I don't think everybody in this building, Mr. Chairman, agrees with that. We're the appropriating body, even though the Constitution gives us that authority. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Mr. Teal.
The final category here is savings. And as you can see, savings last year were about $1.2 billion. This year, the governor pulls $235 million from savings. And I think it's come up before that proposal is to spend money from the AHFC savings account. And of course, again, you determine whether she's allowed to do that. You can change that fund code. You can delete the projects. Either way, we look at it differently than OMB does. OMB says that $238 million does not appear in the general fund column. It appears as other expenditures and goes over here in this other column, the columns being general, federal, and other. So in the OMB summary, the 238 appears here. We say, come on now, that was general funds that went into this AHFC account. You simply were looking for a place to park money temporarily, and that if you're going to spend that money, you don't get to call it non-GF. You pull it out, and it becomes GF, and there's no changing flavors of money here. You're spending general funds, or in this case, withdrawing money from a savings account and adding it to the general fund, where you then spend it. So we disagree with OMB on that point, but I don't think it's a major disagreement. It's something that I think I just explained and that I hope you understood.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, if that $238 million coming out of Alaska Housing, which the legislature, as I recall, set that aside for future capital budgets in the event we have revenue shortfalls, substantially more than we have today. If that was taken out of general funds, would this budget then be in the red on submission? You're showing here 147.8 in pre-saving surplus.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Stedman, if you look at line 46, you'll see that the pre-saving surplus is $147 million. And that's because we counted the projects that the governor proposed funding from the AHFC account. We coded them as general funds. So they appear here, and the surplus is $147 million. Once you account for the withdrawal from savings, the surplus is 382. So the governor's fiscal summary says that the surplus is 382 million. And we say, yes, if you count the $238 million that you pull from the savings account, you've got a surplus of $380. But really, you've got a surplus here of current year money of $147 million. But as you well know, Mr. Chairman and Senator Stedman, the 2010 forecast here is for oil at $74 a barrel. The forecast comes out, revised forecast comes out tomorrow, and I'd be willing to take bets that it's lower than $74, and if it's below $70 or so, there will be a deficit in 2010.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Mr. Teal?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, David, help me out real quick. As I was watching the news early this morning, it appeared to me that oil was about $34 a barrel. Is that about right?
About 40.
About 40? Okay. But as I go to the AHFC account, as I recall, that money was set aside for gasland activities. Is that accurate?
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, it is set aside for gas line and other purposes. So
we're now and othering, is that?
I would say we're and othering. Yes.
I guess I'm confused, since the gas line is our number one priority. Why would we now and othering? It's my number one priority, in-state gas, but in any event, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Huggins. Mr. Teal?
And again, referring to Senator Huggins' reference to $40 oil, if the forecast comes out or if oil actually is at $40 or so, we're looking at a deficit of about $3 billion. And you can see that from, it's hard to see the axis here, but $40 oil is a $3 billion deficit. So bottom line here is that the fiscal summary is positive now, whether you look at post-saving surplus or pre-saving surplus. But it's likely to go negative tomorrow, and I literally mean tomorrow, as the forecast is revised. So you have some options. You can increase revenue, you can spend less, or you can use reserves. Using reserves is the easy option. But of course, you know that you can't hide your head in the sand and pretend that the reserves will last forever. $8 billion is an incredible amount of money, but a $3 billion deficit is also an incredible amount of money, and you can see that the reserves won't last more than about 3 years if we continue to have $40 oil. We've always been fortunate in the past. This isn't the first time we've had predictions of, we fall over the cliff in 2 years. And every year, for several years, we and other forecasters came in and said, we're okay this year, but in 2 years we're broke. I guess I have hopes that oil's going to come back and rescue us again, but there's certainly no guarantee that that's going to happen.
Senator Stedman.
Could we, Mr. Chairman, move back to the little mountain chart, the history, budget and fund history? Just a couple quick questions. I'd like to know when the state has faced revenue shortfalls of $2-3 million in the past, and at what point should we be concentrating on for a break-even rate, the dark blue and the light blue in combination, or some number above that, or some number below it, or?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, I think you're looking at the dark blue. You may be able to achieve some operating reductions. In the past, that's one of your options here, is to spend less. But subcommittees, committees, the legislature in general has found it very difficult to reduce the operating budget. The governor's operating budget was actually very restrained, 2.7% growth. You're going to find a very difficult time removing the increments that she allowed, because I think that agencies probably had requests that were much larger than what she passed on to the legislature. Now, if you, you know, it's always difficult to compare because from one year to the next, but 2.7% is small relative to past years, and it, you know, ranks up here with this flatline stuff. You may be able to pare it back a little bit, but certainly that is a base for you. The statewide, the light blue, you can change the oil taxes if you want, get rid of the credits. There are things that you could do with retirement that would cause the rates to fall. So this can be reduced. But I don't know whether you want to come in and start changing oil taxes again. But you know, that's the big pieces here. It's $1 billion is the light blue, and 450 of that is retirement, and 400 is oil credits, or 300 is oil credits in this year, sorry. The rest is debt service. You've already issued those general obligation bonds in 2003 and 2009. So there's not much you can do to reduce this by a great deal, short of taking action outside the budget. Capital budget, as we said, is something that you can reduce. It's probably the easiest thing to reduce. But it may be easier to easier to reduce the capital budget given the stimulus package. But again, we're probably several weeks away from being able to say whether there are match requirements, whether this supplants or merely supplements the capital budget.
Senator Stedman?
Well, I'm just kind of curious. I think on the, Mr. Chairman, the last FY07, I think that budget was done by the previous administration entirely, and maybe FY08 submitted by the previous administration and adjusted by the current. So if we go back to 07 before the current administration, are we spending more or less than the current administration using 07 as a base?
Through the chair, Senator.
Or your agency and statewide.
Well, and here you can see that operating budget, agency operations has increased substantially. Several hundred million dollars. You can see that statewide has also increased substantially because that was pre-retirement and pre-oil tax credits. The capital budget was larger, again, almost double, and we had savings. But ignoring them, the sum of the three bars in 07 is down here at around 4.2 billion or so, and here we're at 5 billion. So we've increased expenditures by probably about $800 million per year since 07.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Please proceed, Mr. Teal.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Huggins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. David, as I recall, over the last couple, 3 years, we had some debate with OMB about where the savings money was going to go, and in one case there was proposal to put it into the principal of the permanent fund. Could you just review that with us?
Last year?
Yes.
Senator Hiddens?
In previous years?
Through the chair, the governor last year proposed making deposits to the permanent fund principal or to the earnings reserve. If we had done that, the savings would not be available to you today if they went into the permanent fund principal.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I know you were one, but both the co-chairs were guiding forces in that. But how we footnote that for ourselves, we need to footnote it because it's hugely important as we're looking at deficits and budgets and having money off the table. So I just say thank you very much for doing that. Follow-up question.
Senator Huggins.
On the other hand, we have lost money, David, as I recall, in our budget reserve or the sub-account. Could you just give us about a 30-second burst on how that happened? And apparently there's some change in investment strategy by, this case, revenue, and what impact that's had on our reserve account.
Mr. Deal.
Through the chair, Senator Huggins, the two big reserve accounts, the statutory budget reserve first, since it's very easy, isn't affected at all by losses. As I testified last week, actually Kim Garnero confirmed that I was correct in assuming that the statutory budget reserve account neither gains nor loses because as investments win or lose, because there's simply a sub-account of the general fund, and the interest does not accrue to the sub-account, it accrues to the reserve account, it occurs in the general fund. So that if we have good returns, you still have exactly what you put in, $1 billion. And what's happened now is that the sub-account has not declined with any losses. The general fund, in fact, has absorbed those losses. So we have exactly the $1 billion in the statutory budget reserve account. The constitutional budget reserve account is the one that's complicated because they being revenue, put about $4 billion of that account into a sub-account, which then lost close to 30% of its value, or roughly $1 billion. The main account, about 5% or so, so that our reserves declined by $1 billion.
And for the committee's information, we will be taking up the CBR discussion tomorrow. We had discussions on that last Wednesday, and we were going to take it up later in that week, but because of scheduling problems, we haven't been able to get back to that, but it's our intention to bring that up before the full committee again tomorrow.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And
thank you, Senator Huggins.
Senator Huggins, there's approximately $6.8 billion left in the constitutional budget reserve instead of the $7.8 that you might expect.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As we look at the issue of the defined contribution, and if we went back to the defined benefit, what kind of effect would that have on that light blue bar up there, and when would it affect it, if it does, if it would affect it?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, it would have very little effect. The change from defined benefit to defined contribution is something that takes years, mm-hmm. because, as you know, current employees aren't affected, it's only new hires.
So
it's a very long range thing.
Mr.
Senator Stedman.
If I could just add a little recollection on Senator Huggins' comment, Mr. Chairman. I think not only was there an interest in a sweep into the permanent fund, but there was interest in an endowment created for DOT and some other endowment work, which would have also contributed to the dry up and the liquidity that we otherwise have today, if we would have implemented those proposals. And clearly there was a lot of interest around the state for some of that stuff, and in retrospect, I think the committee did make the right move by not going down that road. And maybe someday if we had time, Mr. Chairman, we can actually have those calculations run.
Thank you, Senator Stedman. Mr. Teal.
So really, your third option here is to increase revenue. You've never been very successful, you being the legislature, not you guys specifically. Never been successful with personal income taxes or sales taxes or any other statewide taxes. You did act recently to increase the petroleum taxes. But anything that you do in terms of revenue changes would probably take a few years to implement, just because revenue measures take a while before they they show an impact. So the most effective means of increasing revenue is to increase oil prices. And again, you've got no guarantee that that's going to happen. So your options become fairly limited, which is spend less, and based on the amount of the deficits, the projected deficits here, there is no way that you can spend less and eliminate the deficits. So you've narrowed your choices to essentially no choice. You must use reserves. And of course, that doesn't mean you throw up your hands and do nothing. It means that you have to look at the rate that you're burning through your reserves and try to minimize that.
But there are some school districts I read across the United States that are going to a four-day school week, thereby eliminating, 20% of their operating budget for education. Maybe not that much, but some school districts are, some states are taking pretty drastic actions in order to accomplish budget reductions.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. There are some states that where state workers have gone to a four-day week.
Senator Stedman.
Mr. Chairman, we all, I think, recognize we can go to the earnings reserve account if we so choose here in the legislature, which hopefully we're never going to be in that position. But what is in the earnings reserve, roughly, Mr. Teal, that's available for appropriations in the event that we expended our savings accounts that you've mentioned earlier?
Through the chair, I believe the numbers are about $3 billion in cash, but there's about $13 billion in unrealized losses, so that, that's kind of the argument here is what's in the earnings reserve. It's either negative $10 billion or positive $3 billion. If you believe that it's cash that counts, since you neither can appropriate your unrealized gains, nor should you, but you can't ignore them on the way down, because as soon as you start thinking there's money to spend, those unrealized losses become realized losses as soon as you sell to generate the money that you're going to be using. So I guess I'd focus on the cash instead of the unrealized, and say there's about $3 billion. And with that, you've got roughly $1 billion going towards inflation proofing and another $1 billion towards the permanent fund dividends. So you may be left with somewhere between $1 and $2 billion of cash in the earnings reserve account. But of course, that depends on markets. That can turn around fairly rapidly or continue to sink.
On that note, on line 61, it shows here that we're going to spend about $25 million more on in the dividend program. This is just an estimate, but it shows that there's an increase in the amount of money that we're budgeting for, or is proposed by this administration for permanent fund dividends.
Mr. Chairman, that's true, but the permanent fund dividend is an open-ended appropriation, meaning that it says the amount required to pay according to the statutory calculation. So that this was an early estimate. With the losses that have occurred, there's a five-year moving average, and the appropriation will be whatever the statutory formula comes up with, not this specific amount.
Do you have any further comments for your presentation, Mr. Teal?
I don't. If there are any more questions, I'd be happy to.
Senator Elton.
Thank you. And going back to the state fiscal summary, the governor has proposed in her budget capital of $535 million in GF. Do you have any idea how much of that is necessary for federal match?
My guess is about $150 million, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Elton. Are there any final questions before we adjourn this meeting today? Seeing none, thank you, Mr. Teal. Again, I'd like to remind the committee that we will convene tomorrow to discuss the CBR performance review. We will not be going into the to Senate Bill 95 on the supplemental because it will be waiting for the amendments, and it does not make sense to go into those until we have those amendments before us. So with that, we're adjourned.